hey, this is Brian. I listen to her every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock, make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
It's the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR, 1490 AM, heard every Saturday, noon to 1:30 PM, maybe sometimes a little bit longer. And you can find the show on the podcast platform of your choice, whether it's SoundCloud, iTunes, Podomatic.com has the biggest, most extensive archive. And you can, of course, stream the station live at 1490WWPR.com. Reinstituting the Sarasota Bitcoin Meetup coming up June 16th at Selby Library, downtown Sarasota. That'll be 3 o'clock. That's a Saturday, so we'll be doing the show, and then at least one of us will be at Selby Library at 3 o'clock after that. In the studio right now, we have blockchain CPA, Kara Haas. We have Augie, our somewhat contrarian, in progress, moving.
He's converting.
He's got a movement going.
All but currencies.
And crypto skeptic blockchain. I still don't know what the word is for somebody that just isn't embracing it, but is okay with it.
Yeah.
I'll come up with that. We got to get to our guest. Pardon me?
Neutral.
Neutral. Okay. That's good. That's good enough so we can get to the guest. Anyway. Goldbug1, a.k.a. Andy, also in the studio, TradingView.com columnist and co-founder of SeekingCryptos.com. Well, I've been looking forward to today so that we get a chance to speak with John Sacco of Sacco Consulting. He actually was referred to us by our sponsors, Byte Federal, saying that he had a background. They were familiar with his work. In fact, months ago they had first mentioned him, and we finally have him on the show. He's a 2009 graduate from Florida State University in political science and economics, and he has 10 years' experience in developing and modernizing government IT systems, 5 years in the cryptocurrency and blockchain space, 5 years administering as back-end developer, and 5 years data analytics, database design, it goes on, 3 years cybersecurity, has won multiple awards and certifications. One that stands out, actually two, I'm going to have to ask him about both, 2016 a certified Scrum Master, and 2017 a certified Bitcoin practitioner. So,
what was the first one? Certified what?
A certified Scrum Master, CSM. Yeah, well, you're just going to have to wait a minute, because now that we've entered...
hope you're working on
the
boats
line,
or something, shipping off...
You can see more at his website at Sacco, SACCO.io. And before he runs away, let me quickly bring him on the air and say thank you, John Sacco, for joining us on the Henry Rain Show.
Hello, Henry. It's good to talk with you today, and also the panel. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to start out with what is a certified Scrum Master?
Sure. You know, a lot of these certifications really are just initials that go after your name on a business card in the consulting world. But a Scrum Master is somebody who, a practitioner of the Scrum method of software development, which is not to go too deep, but it's based on the agile methodology, and it's more of a newer way of developing software where you're constantly producing functional code as opposed to trying to plan everything in advance, 6 months out and not really be anywhere 6 months further because you really can't plan these kind of software projects. So Scrum is a methodology that's gaining a lot of popularity. As well as the CBP, which is the Certified Bitcoin, I think it's professional, maybe not practitioner, but it's a recent certificate where you can get it online by taking a quiz. So there's not a whole lot to some of these certificates.
Okay, you struck a chord with Augie. He wants to say something.
I would suggest that rugby is a reference when you come out of the scrum with a ball, you're going on your own, right?
There you go. Yeah. I believe there's a rugby genesis there somewhere.
That's the only sport you play with a hooker, right?
Well,
that's what they have. They have the hooker. That's the guy that goes into the scrum and pulls the ball out.
Okay, great. John, thank you. Thank you for joining us on the Henry Rain Show today. Tell us how you went in this direction from your at Florida State in 2009, getting ready to enter the job force in the height of the Great Recession, but somehow you wound up in the Bitcoin cryptocurrency space and blockchain. How'd that happen?
So I graduated, during the Great Recession of 2008-2009, and the only, after several months of applying for jobs, primarily in government, because that's what I studied and I've always kind of had a passion for public service, the only job I could get in 2009 was taking calls for unemployment claims in the call center for the department that handles unemployment claims, the Department of Economic Opportunity. And so in 2009, I got a job there working in their mainframe, the old screens where you're typing in the commands prompts and it's the green screen. We're dealing with 1970s technology when I get there, and there was an opportunity to help modernize that system right, and it was kicking off right when I got there. I was really in the right place at the right time. I was very eager to move into IT. I've always kind of programmed websites on the side, but I never was a computer scientist per se. So it was a natural fit to transition over and help bring some of that public policy knowledge into the IT scene. Now, one of the things that Florida is notorious for, at least in the public benefits arena, which I was in with unemployment, but it doesn't matter whether it's food stamps or tax fraud, is the fact that South Florida, Miami in particular, is the hotbed of identity theft. And we were victims to that, especially beginning in 2012, 2013. And so my dovetail into cryptocurrency began as I was trying to help Florida solve the identity theft problem. I realized a very important point was that the economy around stolen data had changed dramatically from people digging through trash cans behind an office park to basically just asking a Ukrainian hacker for 10 million social security numbers and paying $100,000 in Bitcoin. So that was a dramatic shift that I initially became interested through that portal and also became an advocate for blockchain technology, especially Bitcoin.
John, let me just stop and ask you one quick question.
Absolutely.
So you had your credentials in political science and economics, and now you find yourself in the job. Did you have any credentials in IT, or did you just say, I can do this?
Yeah, I did. I had programmed ever since I was a little kid. I grew up with an MS-DOS system, and we had internet
in
the early 90s.
But did you have any actual credentials?
Software systems was natural, but coding, not coding specifically, until about the time I was introduced to Bitcoin.
Okay, but I, just to go back to the point, as far as your superiors in this position, you couldn't just point to some other letters behind your last name. You had the knowledge, but you didn't have the letters there, correct?
I didn't have the letters. I didn't have the years. I didn't have the connections. I had just moved to Tallahassee from
Pensacola. How did you convince your superiors, who probably don't have any background in it either, that you were the guy to do it? I mean, I know you can do it, but how did you convince them?
I was the first person, for at least the state of Florida's Department of Economic Opportunity, which was the Agency for Workforce Innovation at the time, I was one of the very first people to transition from the business area, which is the claims processing unit, into IT officially. And so with that transition, I gained a lot of clout in the IT department because I had such a strong connection with the decision makers, the program managers, the bureau chiefs in the actual program area. And so I was able to get a lot of things done from the technology side that my counterparts in the IT department weren't, but also it was a collaborative effort where I needed their help to learn just as much as they needed my help to learn on the business side.
I see. Okay.
One thing that sticks out in his bio there is he's a Seminole fan, and
but they got a lot of chutzpah. They're just going to convince people that they can do stuff.
I have a good story that I was off the air, but about the Ohio State Florida State game up in New Orleans at the Sugar Bowl. When was that? You remember when that was? Was that 98 or something?
I just graduated there, but I don't know the history.
He's not as old like you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. You don't remember when they were at their, you know, when they actually were a decent team.
And they won a championship since 2009, too.
The man's busy coding.
They won right after I left. We stunk pretty badly the years I was there. Yeah, but I'm a fan. I watch if we're in a championship game or something.
All right, John, excuse us. Any shiny object gets us off topic. So, all right, so you've gotten to this position where you have an amount of trust in the government, and you're making this transition into Bitcoin because of the security problems and the hackers that want to get paid in Bitcoin. And what was your first – was that the first time you'd ever heard of it, or were you already aware of it somewhat?
I was somewhat aware of it. I had heard about it, I think, just browsing some articles. I actually had I bought my first Bitcoin in 2013 in January for about $14, and I immediately spent it on a membership to a forum that was accepting Bitcoin at the time. And I thought it was a very inconvenient way to make a payment because it was so difficult to buy it. And it wasn't until I later on started realizing some of the implications for the decentralized aspect of the blockchain that it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks later in the year as the price was going up, that this was something that's going to be significant and that I could potentially be, you know, in the start of a field that's, you know, very nascent and new, that's just developing, and that seems to be the case as I've watched it unfold since 2013.
So you started looking at working for the government, looking at corruption and how the Russians or Ukrainians were
security
and doing the security thing, and from there you went into you're now doing your own, you're on your own here? Are you doing your own thing?
Yeah, so 2 years ago I left the state officially. I no longer was a government employee. I was managing the software development department for DEO, Florida DEO. I left that role.
What's
and went
the Florida DEO?
State government consulting.
Florida
DEO.
Florida Department of Occupational Irregular.
Employment Opportunity. Economic Opportunity.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
They're like the Department of Labor for Florida. Yeah. They do workforce. And
back in the day, Son, we used to call that the unemployment department, you know, but okay. It's now the reemployment. Yeah.
Reframing.
So.
It's reemployment.
Reemployment, okay.
Too.
It's now Reemployment Assistance, and it's now the Department of Economic Opportunity, and so that's, you know, it's part of the umbrella of things that agency does. And yeah, so I left the state of Florida in 2016 to become a full-time consultant, and mostly for state governments and doing development work, database design, and also cybersecurity assessments and audits. NIST-based audits for other state government agencies, and starting in January of this year, so 2 years after I left the state in 2018, I just struck out on my own, and now I'm doing full-time blockchain consulting or thereabouts. You know, I'm basically looking for projects to help assist or advise in either an hourly basis or just a, you know, a strategic partnership type,
John,
of a
let
case.
Me just
so
quickly,
I'm not really promoting anything.
Quickly say you're listening to WWPR, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt. So with your background in government, are you looking to do lobbying or just consulting?
I think consulting. My knowledge is more in enterprise IT systems and helping modernize those, and I see a lot of opportunities for blockchain to be a part of that planning discussion as every agency, you know, looks to modernize and upgrade to the next generation of software. I see blockchain having a fit, and I'd like to be part of that brand new industry, which government is going to be one of the slower industries to adopt blockchain, but I certainly see a lot of aspects from a trust standpoint to have that trustworthy, immutable database, that single source of truth. I think the citizens will ultimately demand that, and we'll see it hopefully within my lifetime.
So now as far as the government goes with blockchain, what are they doing now utilizing blockchain, or are they doing anything?
There's a lot of different types of projects going on with blockchain, and I would say most of them can be characterized by the fact that they're in a research stage. There are not any working pilots that I'm aware of. Government systems are very complex. They have a lot of interconnections and interdependencies, and so it will be. We'll start to see enterprise blockchain applications in the private sector first, which I don't know that we've seen a lot of that yet, and then we'll see government. But right now, it's still more research-based.
When you speak of government, are you talking the federal level or the state level or both?
At all levels. I think there's some interest, as you guys have had at a county level on your show, the tax collector from Seminole County. There's interest at the state level. There's consortiums of states that are working together, looking at how blockchain is going to impact state governments and how they share data. There's also intergovernmental projects where federal agencies are working with the state agencies and looking at how their systems can all be optimized through blockchain.
Now, without giving away any proprietary information, is there any immediate fields you're working in?
Yeah, so some of the projects that I'm really interested in right now is more development work around wallet software and how we can generate secure private keys. And I'm working with a couple companies that produce collectible wallets. PolymerBit is one of them, as well as PaperSafe. And I've helped automate a lot of their back-end processes for how they produce these collectible paper wallets, which I think are interesting aspects of the culture as well, because I'm a coin, you know, collector as well, and I think that it's an interesting aspect that you can take a physical object and make it a bearer bond of holding cryptocurrency, like the Casatius coin.
Give us a description of what you're talking about.
Yeah, so what I'm talking about is essentially what you see on every news article for Bitcoin, which is a picture of a coin with a B on it. And on the other side of it, usually the sticker, a hologram that's tamper evident. And underneath that hologram sticker is a private key. And when you peel that sticker, it delaminates the hologram to the point where you no longer have, you can see that this coin has been tampered with. And so there is a economy or a market for trading these physical Bitcoins that have been untampered with. And I'm fascinated with it because it's just an interesting development, and I also like to collect a couple of pieces. I've gone to a few of the conferences as well in the last year where I've helped kind of promote some of these products. A lot of them don't contain Bitcoin. They're meant to be more collector's items, and so it's more of an artwork, but the fact that you can hold cryptocurrency is a really interesting aspect.
So who are the artists working on that?
There's many of them. There's some that are they're making coins. Kialara is one of the more prominent ones. He makes these really intricate artworks that you have to basically destroy it, this metal sculpture, to get to the private key. And so it has the public keys printed on it, so you could load it up if you wanted to. Kialara is one. Casatius is another. And there's several. There's probably 100 makers.
John, let me just take a second to ask my panel here. Where would we ever find an artist that has skill with metal sculpture?
I think there's a left-handed one somewhere.
Well, he's being unusually quiet today.
He's usually a grumpy old man, but, you know, what talented artist, by sure, by all means.
Augie. You're being called right now.
Well, if you're going to break things down to get to the key inside the heart of the beating investor, then you have something that artists often don't do, but destroy things. However, you have the ISIS among us, and they love destroying things. So that may be the artist, too.
I don't think Augie is picturing what you were describing,
Well, the peeling off of the label.
Well, the metal sculpture part. Could you explain that to him, please? John?
Well, this would be if you're gonna mint your own coin, you need to essentially have somebody create a die and
do a wax
engrave that with the design. Yeah. So I haven't produced coin. I don't really sell these coins. But that's the idea, is you would strike the coin with this design, the sculpture, and that's how you get the imprint.
You commonly use beeswax, and then you can shape it, and then you cast it.
John, you helped us out. We just had to push him down the road way. He's got a couple other assistants here that are pushing him into the blockchain artwork world.
We'll definitely check out those.
I know Kara's probably got questions
companies.
For you.
Well, in particular, so your aspect of this project is the cryptography and coding behind the hologram?
That's correct. The private key. So when you create a Bitcoin wallet or a cryptocurrency wallet, you know, behind the scenes there's the software has to create that key and allow the funds to be, you know, stored securely. And so what I've helped these companies do is write software that lets them generate the keys and also wipe out all of the data so that there's no logs, there's no there's no history of the keys, so that they can have a more secure production process when they create these items. As well as helping out with other types of software companies that are doing things in the wallet space, such as code reviews and looking at, you know, making sure that anybody who's holding custodial funds has a secure architecture, and that's a whole world in and of itself, just doing security audits. But yeah, that's kind of a broad description of what I do.
We're speaking with John Sacco of Sacco Consulting Services. His website is sacco.io. That's sacco.io. You could email him if you have questions about anything that you've heard here at John, just for John, at sacco.io. And I can see Andy reaching for the mic. So what do you have for John?
You said something interesting earlier. It said you collect other coins. Am I assuming you collect gold and silver as well?
And you're talking to Goldbug One, so you know where that may be going.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
Andy, Goldbug One. Yes, that's correct. In fact, I wasn't interested in traditional coins until I went to a Tallahassee meetup, Bitcoin meetup, and met a silver bug, a gold bug, more of a silver bug, and he introduced me to the world of collectible silver, and I sort of introduced him to the world of cryptocurrency because he was there just sort of, you know, to hear about it. And so it wasn't until I met him, I had been interested in cryptocurrency for a couple of years at that point, but it wasn't until I met him and looked at the hard currencies that I said, you know what, if I'm going to look at buying a silver coin, I might as well combine it with my other passion, which is cryptocurrency, which led me down the rabbit hole of the collectible cryptocurrency physical coin.
That's interesting. So what's your favorite coin out there?
As far as the actual a physical coin?
Yes, yeah, the physical.
I like the Perth Mint, and I also like Chinese Pandas.
Oh, okay, so you're collecting modern coins.
Yeah, modern numismatic silver, just kind of as a collector. I'm not a big, you know, bullion guy.
Well, and he can probably back me on this. The Perth Mint is so far ahead of the United States Mint as far as design, artistry.
Artistry,
and everything else. They have some cool coins. You know, the Canadian Mint, they just have cool coins. Everyone's putting out cool coins except for the United States. I mean, it's sad.
That's another thing Andy's unhappy about.
Yeah, it's just sad.
John, stand by. We're going to go to a break, and then we'll come back, pick up any topic you want to be sure we talk about, but then we're going to ask you to participate in a segment called Kara's Troubled Token on EOS and some of the other things that she'll be bringing up. Is that going to be okay with you?
Yep, looking forward to it. Talk to you soon.
Okay, all right, well, we'll be back with John Sacco, Sacco Consulting, right after this.
Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Byte Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Byte Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Byte Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Byte Federal ATM near you. Go to ByteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's ByteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on the Henry Rein Show.
There's a new way to experience wellness. Hi, I'm Laura Alcover, owner and operator of Alcover Massage. We're the first business in Bradenton's Village of the Arts to accept cryptocurrency. Whether you use Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, or Litecoin, you can now pay for quality massage therapy using cryptocurrency at Alcover Massage. So if you seek medical massage or a relaxing session with light pressure, your session will be conducted by a talented therapist. You'll be glad you booked with us. Check out and like our Facebook page where you can book online in seconds. And remember to tell your friends. Give us a call, 941-592-3187. That's 941-592-3187. Alcover Massage, quality massage therapy in your neighborhood. MA number 50525, MM number 34081.
It's all the way up.
Henry Rein Show, WWPR, 1490 AM. Again, reminding you, coming up Saturday the 16th at Selby Library in Sarasota, relaunching the Sarasota Bitcoin Meetup. Also, the third Wednesday of the month at Connect Bradenton will be the Blockchain Business and Development Meetup. We have a very special guest for that, our own blockchain CPA, Kara Haas, who's here in the studio with us. Also in the studio, Augie, as always, and Goldbug1, a.k.a. Andy, on the phone lines with us is John Sacco of Sacco Consulting. The website is sacco.io, S-A-C-C, two C's, O.io, and you can reach him if you have any questions or ideas that you want to share with him at first name John, J-O-H-N, at sacco.io. And speaking of sharing ideas, John, before we get into some of the topics in Kara's segment, what's on your mind in the blockchain cryptocurrency world right now?
Yeah, it's really just it's a very chaotic time right now. My thought when we were heading above 10,000 and all the way up to 20,000, which I thought was absurd back in January, I knew exactly what was coming for the next 6 months, which was going to be a long, protracted bear market. And, you know, there seems to be so much of a focus on price right now. When if honestly we had never gone above 10,000 or to 20,000 and we had just kind of lingered around 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and here we were in, you know, this year, the entire discussion would be different than the fact that we're 50% down from the highs, you know, the all-time highs. And so, you know, price seems to be dominating everything. I'm not as interested in price as I am in the development space around Bitcoin. And I think one of the most exciting things that doesn't really get enough credit is the Lightning Network and what that's going to do to Bitcoin and allow it to compete with Ethereum and all the other coins that are supposedly going to eat Bitcoin's lunch. So, I think the Lightning Network is a worthy topic, as well as many other technical innovations within just Bitcoin. I could spend an hour going into some of these developments, which I think are going to really change the next generation of cryptocurrency.
Well, one of the things about the Lightning Network is to ease the use and to make it a speedier platform for transactions. What about the original reason for Bitcoin as a currency? I mean, now we're moving into a store of value with that, but we have things like Litecoin or Bitcoin Cash or others that are trying to become the currency. What do you see when you look out in the future for developing worlds using cryptocurrency, or even, you know, someplace in the more developed world, EU, for example?
I don't see that a blockchain in the current incarnations that we have. I don't see how a blockchain can support worldwide commerce at a base level. It's certainly going to have to be at a secondary level, like the way that the Internet was developed when we had just IP and every hub in the network had to share every data with every other hub. That's sort of how a blockchain works today. And the only way that it's going to reach its full potential is to have a second layer like HTTP, like what we had with the Internet, which allowed you know, billions upon billions of people to use the internet, whereas in the early 90s, it wasn't really clear that the internet could support that much use, and certainly the speeds weren't there to support it. So I see Bitcoin evolving in the same way, and it's certainly the furthest along when it comes to secondary protocols, even ahead of Ethereum.
You know, it's interesting, you're a coin collector, and one of my arguments always for Bitcoin doesn't need to be faster is that it's more used for a store of value like silver and gold than it is for making a coffee payment at Starbucks. And so, therefore, it really doesn't matter this, you know, you don't need lightning speed transactions on Bitcoin, at least Bitcoin for that, for my example, as opposed to there's other coins out there that can do those lightning speed transactions.
Right.
So, I mean,
yeah,
I kind
of
look.
Innovation here is not fast and quick payments. It's distributed trust and decentralized currency. If it takes 10 minutes, that's amazing compared to what we had before Bitcoin.
Yeah, imagine trying to go to.
Let me just, because we're going to get to
Bitcoin, PayPal.
I just want to touch on the Lightning Network one more time. Now, when we think of supply chain, and we say, like, we have the railroad carrier CSX, who have lots of clients that they carry freight for, and the Lightning, so they could set up channels within the Lightning Network for all Tropicana here locally and other clients that they move freight for. And is that where we're going to see it implemented first? Those
you
kind of relationships?
You will see cases like that develop on top of Bitcoin. You won't see them in the near term. I think the Lightning Network has a lot of work to build out, and you know, keep in mind, this is security software, this is financial software, and there are really only a handful of people talented enough to design these systems in a way that are future-proof and can protect people's finances and their wealth, you know, decades from now. And so when I look at the development cycle for some of these projects, you know, either they don't have the talent and they're making it up, or they have subpar talent. And they're going to deliver software that is going to be ridden with bugs and issues. So, you know, the Lightning Network is going to be developed at its own pace. And anybody who tells you that it's being developed in a insecure way, they're really flying in the face of a consensus of engineers and cryptography experts that are all very supportive of the Lightning protocol as well as the Bitcoin protocol.
All right, John Sacco, stand by with us, and we're going to go into a weekly segment now that has become something everybody looks forward to here.
Token trouble. That token was trouble.
All right, Carr, what you got for us this week?
Well, what I have is a mass panic that ensued amidst some people with EOS, the China security firm that was doing their audits. Had discovered quite a big bug or security vulnerability.
Well, before you go there, now tell us a little bit more what EOS is, because now I got some background here. They just completed a $4 billion crowd sale.
Yes, that's been going on, I think, for about the past year.
Okay.
And it's a platform.
What makes it different?
I understand it to be similar to Ethereum.
The Chinese Ethereum?
They are, right? They are
Chinese. I think that's how they're referred to.
They definitely are. Chinese Ethereum. We have some debate as to who will emerge as the actual Chinese Ethereum, but they want to be. They have been going through vulnerability testing, security audits, and the big firm in China, I don't know that I can do it justice. It's like QUIHOO360. But they announced late this week that they had discovered some significant vulnerabilities where essentially it could be hacked and somebody could get in there and do whatever they want. They can change private keys. They can manipulate the network.
Luckily, and we have a security expert on the line.
Exactly, who's going to be able to weigh in and either confirm or deny some of my interpretation that they were planning, and they still are, planning on transitioning to their and launching their mainnet this weekend, like right now. And so I think there may have been some panic around people just hearing headlines and that my main thing is I want people to make sure that they're not panicked. They did discover this. They have taken the steps to correct it. They have another, they've introduced additional bounties, I think $10,000 bug bounties. They expect some bugs in the first week, but they're not going to go live with this, and your tokens are
I understand there's some other problems besides the bug problem, is that unlike Bitcoin, which has lots of miners, or other tokens for that matter, have lots of miners, they're just going to have 21 nodes. Is that correct?
So that I'm not 100% certain. Well, let me speak
what I think is I've read, and I may be wrong on this, and between you and John and whoever else. As I understand, and plus they don't really have a governance of these 21 decentralized nodes.
It's only for the testing phase, though. Where I think the 21 nodes may just be the testing phase. It's going to – your tokens won't – because they have to convert Ethereum tokens.
And they don't have a hard date time to launch also is the way I understand it. They're just going to release the code, and then people are – this node is going to get started, and this node is going to get started. So the way you're looking at me, I think maybe I'll ask John what he knows about that.
Yeah, you know, as far as the first point that there are bugs discovered in EOS's code, I'm not there in the studio, but you would see the least surprising face that I'm making right now, that there are, in fact, bugs in this software, and there will be more bugs that are found that aren't currently known that any, you know, these security firms aren't going to find. And so I would be very skeptical of storing wealth in any immature blockchain platform, particularly one that's still in a testnet stage, which EOS is in. Now, going back to the consensus mechanism that EOS uses, it does use I don't know if it's 21 nodes, but it uses what's known as sort of a federated Byzantine fault-tolerant system where you don't have thousands of nodes like with Bitcoin or Ethereum. You have these delegated nodes that are delegated to have this authority, and that users can then delegate their trust to, knowing that if these 21 actors, you know, if one of them goes rogue, that they'll be penalized and potentially have their coins even frozen or removed if they do behave maliciously. So this is not something that EOS has introduced, by the way. This is a common way of thinking about how to set up a blockchain that I believe
was the term
by
you
Tendermint.
Used? What was the term you called them?
It's a federated Byzantine fault-tolerant blockchain.
Is that how Neo works?
Neo is a very similar concept. You know, Ethereum wants to go in this direction when they introduce Casper. Cosmos or Tendermint is a project that I follow, which I believe introduced the initial idea of a Byzantine fault-tolerant system, and they are planning a launch soon with, I believe, 99 or 100 nodes to have that decentralization. Yeah, so the idea is that you don't need to have everybody in the world storing everything, that you could have a few relatively trusted, you know, nodes. Now, the big question is, will this, in fact, stand up to hackers? You know, there are no systems right now storing large amounts of wealth that have these types of consensus systems. You know, EOS is storing all of its wealth, its $4 billion, in Ethereum. It's an ERC-20 token. So it remains to be seen whether these networks will hold up to the onslaught of hackers over the next few decades.
For our audience or anyone who may have some of their wealth stored in EOS right now, or maybe passive token holders, and they still want to hold it. Is there a wallet solution that you would feel comfortable with?
Right now my Ether wallet connected to a Trezor or a Ledger hardware wallet is the best way to store your ERC-20 tokens and your other Ethereum tokens, as well as a few other altcoins that the Ledger and Trezor supports.
And then
having a hardware wallet connected to the MyEther wallet web front end is the most secure way to transact, because all of the private key signing happens on the device itself, not on the machine that is submitting the transaction.
go ahead.
Andy, go.
I got a question. My new favorite coin is Elastos. What do you think of that one?
I don't have an opinion on Elastos. I haven't done any research, but I'd be happy to look into it and come back to you on another show at some point.
That's okay. I was just wondering about them. But we'll go back to EOS because they're kind of in the same.
And it is car segment.
Yeah, it is car segment. Let me shut up here.
It because Andy has definitely filled me with Elastos love, and I'm starting to look into it as well. So on his site.
So maybe John will be generous enough to come back, and we'll have a discussion with him.
That would be perfect. That would be so helpful.
Absolutely.
So you can definitely get us there. My last question, if I have time for that, then on EOS is if a user then has it in their hardware wallet, do they still today, June 2nd or very close to it, need to go on and register their Ether addresses with the EOS network in order to be eligible down the road?
Yeah, I assume that there has to be a swap at some point when these networks go live where, you know, currently they are Ether tokens and on the Ethereum network, and what will happen is you will then convert those over to the EOS tokens and essentially burn or flat, you know, call it flash make you unable to sell those EOS Ethereum tokens. And so a lot of times what happens is an exchange like Poloniex or Bittrex will say, hey, deposit your Ethereum EOS tokens, and we'll grant you the legitimate, you know, EOS network, and then you'll download the EOS wallet or find a supported wallet for EOS native tokens, and then you can convert those over and send them to your EOS wallet. So I don't know exactly how that works, but there's a lot of projects that will be moving over from an Ethereum token to their mainnet, which is what they call the mainnet release, as opposed to a testnet release, which is not a mature product.
We've been speaking with John Sacco of Sacco Consulting Services. Again, that website is sacco.io. You can contact Sacco Consulting Services by emailing john@sacco.io, and we'll have to have you back to look at some of these other things that we know nothing about. At least we'll pretend we do. John, what do you want to leave our audience with?
Nothing in particular. You know, like I said, I'm not here promoting an ICO. I'm not really promoting anything. I mainly am here because I love the idea of Florida and cryptocurrency, you know, developing, and it seems to be developing quickly, especially in the South Florida area. So, you know, another aspect of what I'm interested in is how Tallahassee is responding to cryptocurrency and some of the either legislative events that might happen around blockchain in the future, or just some regular petitioning and some exciting developments within some of the agencies here in Florida. And so I'd like to really follow that industry and maybe check in with you from time to time, Henry.
All right, John. Well, thank you for joining us and staying a little longer for us. We appreciate that, and we hope to talk to you again real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Henry, and thanks for the panel. Enjoyed talking to you today.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You know, between two different things that I'm thinking about over the last two or three shows is people like John and Samuel Arms that have such expert knowledge, and we are so much older than them. Even the youngest person in this studio, sorry to say, Carr.
Oh, no, definitely. I consider myself old when I listen to the experience of all these guys.
I graduated in 2008, and I'm thinking, wow.
2009.
Yeah.
Don't make him a year old.
Oh, Lord.
Impressive. Very helpful. Definitely helpful.
And it's amazing how smart these kids are today.
They definitely. They changed the...
I love the part that he didn't even have a degree, and he just went in and took over.
Yeah. You know, that happens with the smartest guys.
Probably just said it with authority.
Tired as it sounds, form follows function, always.
Okay. Well, speaking of form following function, I believe your handlers are going to have a whole new project for you now, not just blockchain on the art on the blockchain, but blockchain collectibles. Yeah, you're going to be busy.
I gave him homework.
There's worse things.
Yes. Andy, what did you got? We got to let me. Should I look at the new website right now?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll do this since we've already run over a couple minutes anyway. I won't say it out loud because you may. SeekingCryptos.com is where we've been referring you to. And I imagine it'll redirect once you get everything done.
Well, it's going to get transferred over.
So let me put the different.
So it'll remain.
It'll still remain SeekingCryptos.com. The original, yeah.
So right now,
it's
I need
like a soft fork.
Yeah. Yeah.
Soft fork. Software upgrade.
So,
of course, you're on 1960s computer equipment.
Well, you know, Packard Bell, at least it's not the old Commodore 64. Okay, so I see the image. Oh, we got to go down lower. Okay.
Wait a second. I just remember, like, logging, like just typing it in, and I'd like to recreate my expression. Wow!
Mark P. Markskit's picture is here. Where's Goldbug?
Look at the picture on top and everything. It's so striking when you...
I try, you know, I'm a very humble guy, and I try to stay behind the scenes.
What about the women's photos?
They're on there.
I think those should be the first things you see.
No. Yeah. Do not listen to all his input.
Look, if I see Mark...
The bald-headed Italian.
Jillian... Or Kara.
What am I going to cook first? Well, like I said, it's still in development. We're getting the, you know, that's about final. But you're right. We need Kara and Gillian on the front there.
Yeah.
You know.
You need to understand your audience, and I believe Seeking Cryptos understands their audience.
No, the audience is overwhelming demographically male.
But they are coming for the
knowledge.
We're
50-50. How do you get overwhelming male?
They're coming
for
the knowledge.
We have 50%. I mean, and we didn't do it by any ratio. We did it because we looked.
I mean, your audience.
Oh, our audience. Oh,
yeah.
I have no idea. There's a lot of women that trade cryptos.
Right, but really, when you go, it's still.
You know, it's myths. Yeah. Does it matter? You're a crypto trader. You're not a.
And it's mental.
You know.
It's mental, but I think the header is good.
How many followers do you have on Twitter?
Somewhere. North of 2,600, I think.
All right. And I've been doing between all the different... I've been on Twitter since 2009 or so, and I struggled to get over 1,000. And Colleen had been on it, what, 2 or 3 months, and she was at 3 or 4,000?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm sorry, Henry. You don't look like Colleen.
I know. Right. That's what I was. Well,
young, beautiful, and smart. You know, I mean, you know, hey, it's a no-brainer there. So you got 14,000 followers, you got 1,400.
I wish.
We haven't pumped her in a bit, and I did finally get on and subscribe to 21 Cryptos, too, so I'm psyched to
And
dive
how
into
does
that.
That relate to Crypto Noob Girl?
She's the editor, yes.
Yeah.
I believe she's the editor,
yeah,
contributor,
that's what I wanted you to say.
All that good stuff.
All right, so crypto at Crypto New Girl at Divide by Nine at Sabine Priestley. That was an easy one.
Yeah.
At
the real.
Have fun. Make sure you come back.
Oh yeah.
All right, we'll be back next week with another Henry Range though.